Chapter 74. Night and day, during 4 months and a half, the little garrison industriously replying all the time. The women and children soon became so used to the roar of the guns that it ceased to disturb their sleep. The children imitated siege and defense in their play. The women, with any pretext, or with none, would sally out into the storm-swept grounds. The defense was kept up week after week, with stubborn fortitude, in the midst of death, which came in many forms by bullet, smallpox, cholera, and by various diseases induced by unpalatable and insufficient food, by the long hours of wearying and exhausting overwork in the daily and nightly battle in the oppressive Indian heat, and by the broken rest caused by the intolerable pest of mosquitoes, flies, mice, rats, and fleas. 6 weeks after the beginning of the siege, more than one half of the original force of white soldiers was dead, and close upon three-fifths of the original native force. But the fighting went on just the same. The enemy mined, the English countermined, and, turn about, they blew up each other's posts. The residency grounds were honeycombed with the enemy's tunnels. Deadly courtesies were constantly exchanged, sorties by the English in the night, rushes by the enemy in the night, rushes whose purpose was to breach the walls or scale them, rushes which cost heavily, and always failed. The ladies got used to all the horrors of war, the shrieks of mutilated men, the sight of blood and death. Lady Inglis makes this mention in her diary. Mrs. Brewer's nurse was carried past our door today, wounded in the eye. To extract the bullet, it was found necessary to take out the eye, a fearful operation. Her mistress held her while it was performed. The first relieving force failed to relieve. It was under Havelock and Outram, and arrived when the siege had been going on for 3 months. It fought its desperate way to Lucknow, then fought its way through the city against odds of 100-1, and entered the residency. But there was not enough left of it then to do any good. It lost more men in its last fight than it found in the residency when it got in. It became captive itself. The fighting and starving and dying by bullets and disease went steadily on. Both sides fought with energy and industry. Captain Birch puts this striking incident in evidence. He is speaking of the 3rd month of the siege. As an instance of the heavy firing brought to bear on our position this month, may be mentioned the cutting down of the upper story of a brick building simply by musketry firing. This building was in a most exposed position. All the shots which just missed the top of the rampart cut into the dead wall pretty much in a straight line, and at length cut right through, and brought the upper story tumbling down. The upper structure on the top of the brigade mess also fell in. The residency house was a wreck. Captain Anderson's post had long ago been knocked down, and Inn's post also fell in. These two were riddled with round shot. As many as 200 were picked up by Colonel Masters. The exhausted garrison fought doggedly on all through the next month, October. Then, November 2d, news came Sir Colin Campbell's relieving force would soon be on its way from Cawnpore. On the 12th the boom of his guns was heard. On the 13th the sounds came nearer. He was slowly, but steadily, cutting his way through, storming one stronghold after another. On the 14th he captured the Martiniere College, and ran up the British flag there. It was seen from the residency. Next he took the Dulquoche. On the 17th he took the former mess house of the 32d Regiment, a fortified building, and very strong. Most exciting, anxious day, writes Lady Inglis in her diary. About 4 p.m., two strange officers walked through our yard, leading their horses, and by that sign she knew that communication was established between the forces, that the relief was real, this time, and that the long siege of Lucknow was ended. The last 8 or 10 miles of Sir Colin Campbell's march was through seas of blood. The weapon mainly used was the bayonet. The fighting was desperate. The way was milestoned with detached strong buildings of stone, fortified, and heavily garrisoned, and these had to be taken by assault. Neither side asked for quarter, and neither gave it. at the Secunderabad, where nearly 2,000 of the enemy occupied a great stone house in a garden. The work of slaughter was continued until every man was killed. That is a sample of the character of that devastating march. There were but few trees in the plain at that time, and from the residency the progress of the march, step by step, victory by victory, could be noted. The ascending clouds of battle smoke marked the way to the eye, and the thunder of the guns marked it to the ear. Sir Colin Campbell had not come to Lucknow to hold it, but to save the occupants of the residency, and bring them away. 4 or 5 days after his arrival, the secret evacuation by the troops took place, in the middle of a dark night, by the principal gate, the Bailey Guard. The 200 women and 250 children had been previously removed. Captain Birch says, "N.D. now commenced a movement of the most perfect arrangement and successful generalship, the withdrawal of the whole of the various forces, a combined movement requiring the greatest care and skill. First, the garrison in immediate contact with the enemy at the furthest extremity of the residency position was marched out. Every other garrison in turn fell in behind it, and so passed out through the Bailey Guard gate, till the whole of our position was evacuated. Then Havelock's force was similarly withdrawn, post by post, marching in rear of our garrison. After them in turn came the forces of the Commander-in-Chief, which joined on in the rear of Havelock's force. Regiment by regiment, was withdrawn with the utmost order and regularity. The whole operation resembled the movement of a telescope. Stern silence was kept, and the enemy took no alarm. Lady Inglis, referring to her husband, and to General Sir James Outram, sets down the closing detail of this impressive midnight retreat, in darkness and by stealth, of this shadowy host through the gate which it had defended so long and so well. T12 precisely they marched out, John and Sir James Outram remaining till all had passed, and then they took off their hats to the Bailey Guard, the scene of as noble a defense as I think history will ever have to relate." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.